7:25 is the current time here in Seoul, South Korea. It's time for Made in Korea with our Professor John DeMoya from Seoul National University, who joins us in the studio down 0-2 in the NBA playoffs. Boy, what a terrible loss that game two with the two fouls that the NBA admitted to.
I have no words, but the Sixers did choke, so I grudgingly accept it. My only comment is go Heat.
Oh, man. I'm actually rooting for the Heat, too, right? They won the upset of the game in game two. I was waiting all week to just let this go, 0-2, because he was so confident that the Sixers was going to beat the Knicks.
I thought they would at least split, and we saw what happened. I acknowledge it.
Where are they going to Philly now? We'll see what happens here. We're not going to talk basketball here. Correct. I needed some sports talk because of all the makeup talk I just did for the past 20-something minutes. Korea had quite a lengthy relationship with what we would call Western medicine,
that's
right?
A good way
biomedicine, mm-hmm. Dating back to the late 19th century. How did new medicine establish its presence in Korea? What is the story of Severance Hospital, which is the first sort of modern facility? Who founded the hospital and how has it changed over the course of history is what we're going to be discussing today. I do know that it's kind of all started off with missionaries.
Yes.
Right? That was kind of the first step here. Where did the arriving missionaries come from and how was medicine part of their appeal when they first arrived in Korea?
Sure. I'll mention two people that are most prominent. Horace Underwood, who's famous for his association with Yonsei University today and will be part of this story. And Oliver Avison, who's a Canadian missionary to go with the American Underwood. And the two of them are both arriving in the 1880s, 1890s. But in particular, as you know, this is often described as the sort of the Enlightenment period in Korea. Kojong is doing all kinds of reforms. So along with education, medicine is an appealing thing insofar as it's different from the existing Hanwihok. We know that Japanese colonization hasn't happened yet, but the government is looking for kind of newer things that it can do to sort of broaden its palate. And obviously, the more friends the Korean government can get at that point in time is protection against what ultimately does happen, which is Japan becomes more powerful.
Let's talk about who founded the first facility back in 1885. Would you say you mentioned
Underwood and Avison,
which is why the Underwood College is the international college over in Yonsei University.
Correct. The name continues.
Yeah. Which you say Yonsei Severance Hospital. So all of this is linked here. Let's talk about this story of Jaejeong-won. What's the story?
Sure. And this is an absolutely wonderful story, which I believe happened historically, but I've always wanted to unpack it. So in the Kapchan coup at this time, and this is how Underwood gets his connection to Kojong, a member of the royal family, Ming Young-ik, is stabbed in the process, gets wounded. And the story goes, and this is the part that I'd want to unpack, that because Underwood is allowed to treat him and he heals him, that this convinces the court, wow, this new medicine is, this is the way to go. And Underwood is given the kind of privilege of, okay, now you'll be allowed to come in and introduce a new Western style in this royal facility, which will become the first hospital, Jaejeong-won. Now, how much of that story has been mythologized over the years, I don't know. But that's, in other words, I'm sure the actual incident happened. But how it's played out, I think I'm sure it's a little bit more complicated than Kojong just woke up and said, wow, you healed that guy. Great.
I mean, one of my favorite, I don't watch a lot of Korean dramas.
Sure. But this one is, yes, it has been traumatized.
But I love, Korean historical dramas. And I've watched, all the dramas in regards to probably Korea's most famous kind of Eastern medicine doctor, Ho-jun.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And you talk about the royal hospital, sort of the royal hospital,
right? Yeah, that's what it is initially. Yeah.
Right. And then you go into the more modern aspect. I mean, for them, I mean, it must kind of seem like it's magic, right? Where they're so used to using like herbs and kind of the old ways.
This is exactly where medical historians and anthropologists are absolutely fascinated in the sense exactly how did local actors perceive this new form of treatment when you're correct. You have up until this time largely been using Hanwihok. There are wonderful pictures in a book, if anyone's interested. I forgot the exact title, but it's published by Don Clark, who is a member of one of these missionary families, is a Koreanist in the U.S. And it has pictures from the late 19th century, early 20th century of the first generation of Korean patients. And the image I will describe is it's a Korean, basically just having someone listen to his heart with the stethoscope. But if you can imagine the traditional clothing, the horsehair hat,
right.
He's got the stethoscope on his chest and he's got this look on his face kind of like, what's going on here? That's the image I like to convey to my students, in that this man probably had never had this procedure done before.
Yeah.
And probably is wondering, why is this guy putting this cold metal object on my chest?
And what is he listening to?
Yeah, what's he doing? what's the significance of this procedure? Exactly.
It's Korea, we talk about the advancements of Korea, but it only has been, a little more than 100-something years.
Yeah, about 140 years now, yeah.
But if you look at the long history of quote unquote modern medicine, I mean, you know, Korea was kind of late to this, which is why I'm kind of also surprised no one was kind of, you know, yelling out witchcraft or anything like that with some of the stuff that they saw for the first time.
Sure.
Let's talk about this story of Severance Hospital.
Yes.
Did they change their
name?
Yeah,
yeah. This is where we can bring in Avison. As far as I understand, Underwood gets the initial permission granted from the government. This is the 1885 facility, which becomes Jeju-Wan, the Royal Hospital. The Severance name change is a couple of things. Avison comes in as a Canadian missionary, is more the guy who's, because Al is a missionary, Avison's actually a doctor. He's going to raise money, and ultimately he will get a particular significant sum from Lewis Severance, who's of Standard Oil. That's where the Severance name comes from.
Oh, is that where it comes
from? Yeah, yeah. And then that's where the name change will take place in 1904. So I guess we can read this as about a two-decade period of going from, well, we've got permission, we have this tiny facility, fundraising, actually getting the equipment, professionalizing and building up the facilities for what would become, you know, more of a hospital as opposed to a small clinic.
This is going to make me sound really dumb, but I always thought like Severance was some kind of like Catholic word, like deliverance, but you receive severance. No, wait, that's severance pay.
That's no, different. As far as I understand, it's the family name. And he also, I believe there is a Severance Foundation, which, you know, it's not just the hospital here, but gives money to other places as well.
I want to kind of go back
to
the book that you talked about, because one of our listeners, Niana, she was asking if the book was in English. And you gave
it is. I'm going to apologize. I don't know the exact title, but it's something.
But the author is?
Yeah, it's Donald Clark.
Donald Clark. And it's kind of...
It's something like missionary photography and early Christianity, but it has a lot of these medical photographs in it. And if it helps, without promoting too much on the air, it's a Korean bookstore here in town called Soul Selection is where I originally found my copy.
Okay.
And they might have it on the website.
There you have it. How would you characterize the relationship between Severance Hospital, what we know right now, and there's the Joseon Christian College... And the Yonhee College?
Yeah, yeah. And this is where your comment about Severance is wonderful in the sense that I have the same, like I always associate, well, of course, Yonsei University, which actually does not exist until 1957.
No, of course.
We'll get there. So what you have for most of the first half of the 20th century, all the way through colonialism, is Severance Hospital, and I assume in geographical proximity, to what is then, today Yonsei University, what is then just a college level, Joseon Christian College and later Yonhee College. So I guess the way I would put it is, Severance trains medical people.
Mm-hmm.
Yonhee, I'll call it that just for simplicity, also does. But I got the impression that they are friendly, geographically proximate, but they do not have the formal relationship that we now know today that took off in the 50s, which is a product of rebuilding after the Korean War. So I guess what I'm trying to say to listeners is don't always think that Severance Hospital and Yonsei have this all through time history. It's only been since 57 where they were there together.
Right.
They were a long time kind of neighborly, friendly, but not necessarily in any way the same institution.
Yeah, I mean, because I mean, one of the things that we don't, there's people who say Severance Hospital, but there's people who go Yonsei Severance Hospital.
And yeah, always, and I tend to conflate the two in my own head.
Yeah, and not to mention, I mentioned earlier that if you go to Yonsei University as an international graduate student, I think the internationals school, I believe, is called Underwood College, right?
Yes, and so, the UIC.
Yeah, and so everything is linked here. But let's talk about the kind of activities that Severance engaged in during the colonial period now, because it gets interesting, right?
Exactly.
We're not talking about Gojong, the times of Gojong now. We're talking about Japan now taking over Korea.
Exactly. This is where it gets really interesting. So Japan, of course, is very much on board with their own version of biomedicine, which they adapted from the Germans because it is part of their rhetoric and their justification for their colonial rule. So they are willing to allow Severance to continue operating and Yonikawa also to continue operating, but according to Japanese standards. And in particular, what this means is probably the college and the hospital are not always going to meet the Japanese standards. That's probably somewhat deliberate. There's a lot of question even now about how much constraint was placed on these institutions because, as you know, the Japanese did not allow or certainly did not encourage lots of Koreans to pursue medical education, higher education. So my limited understanding way of answering this is I don't think they wanted the hospital to produce large numbers of medical graduates, because that's what Keijo Imperial University was supposed to be doing. And I don't think they allowed the college to become a full-fledged research university precisely because, again, Koreans are not supposed to be getting higher level of education. This is one of the dominant rhetorics of the colonial period. So college here is a very deliberate understanding of you're getting basically a couple years of education, not necessarily like a research degree or a higher level degree. Right.
You know what I just realized? Because, again, we talked about how Korea was so used to the Eastern medicine, right? To herbal medicine and things like that.
And that's still going on at this time.
Oh, it really is.
Exactly.
You would eventually see a transition, right? Even because in the colonial times, because during the Japanese colonial times, there were number of Korean doctors who practiced Western medicine. And my kind of curiosity then is, my question then is, the sort of the launch of the Severance Hospital and the arrival of the missionaries and them showing the ways of the Western medicine, I mean, that must have kind of sparked kind of a change within medicine in Korea to a point where now they're teaching doctors, not the old ways, but the Western medicine.
But exactly to your point, let me sort of unpack this in my brain. But remember that if this is 1885 and we hit colonialism in 1910, and the Japanese want you to buy into their system, you are correct that there's a change coming, but it's largely under very colonial conditions where it's hard for Koreans to gain entrance to any institution that's not Severance, because Keijo Imperial, the classes are like 2/3, 3/4 Japanese. So like it's really constrained. And if you actually look at the numbers of Korean doctors who graduate during the colonial period, it's actually relatively low. It's like
it should be, yeah.
It's only a couple hundred over the course of the 30-some years because Severance, Keijo, maybe Sungshul Dae when it's up north. Only a few places produce these graduates, and the Japanese government is really not interested in educating Koreans. It's interested in educating Japanese to be the doctors for what obviously is supposed to be part of the empire.
Nyan says, is the book called Living Dangerously in Korea?
Oh, yeah, that's his memoir. It's the same author, yes, but it's a different book.
Okay, it's a different book here.
But you got the correct author, yes.
Although that book sounds pretty cool.
Oh, it's fantastic. I highly recommend it.
Let's talk about how we can kind of characterize the Korean attitude about using the facilities.
And this beautifully fits in with your last question. I think a lot of Koreans were curious, but also ambivalent or nervous for two reasons. One, it's new, you don't know what it is, and this is really beginning of the 20th century, a relatively new thing. Two, it's heavily connected or associated with the colonial regime. So the stereotypical example that's always given is that the Japanese were very big on enforcing quarantine, and this was actually enforced by actual quarantine police, not just public health officials. So, for example, by the 19-teens, 1920s, if you're Korean and your family member has to be taken away for tuberculosis, for quarantine, that would actually be done by a police official. So if you're Korean, you're curious, there's a new medicine, the facilities, except for Severance, are staffed by the Japanese. Quarantine police are running this. So the stereotype is that lots of Koreans were curious but extremely nervous. And in some ways, and this is part of the story of the transition later to after Haebang, it makes people really nervous. And a better example, my colleague, who's now at Yonsei, ironically, Theodore Junyu, wrote a book called It's Madness about the colonial period access to psychiatry, which is also a new form coming in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And he argues that most Koreans, even today, still have a negative image because psychiatry is associated with the Japanese and policing, and you only saw a psychiatrist if you were arrested for a crime and the Japanese sat you down and said, look, talk to this guy so we can understand sort of what you did.
That is so fascinating, because although this is not related to Severance, but one of the things that a lot of our listeners talk about is, you know, here in Korea, there is lack of mental help.
This is precisely what the book is about.
Right?
Exactly.
Back where we're from in the United States, I mean, everybody will go to the psychiatrist over anything, right? You don't have to be someone who's mentally, you know, or crazy to see a psychiatrist. But here we have this kind of thing where if you're seeing a psychiatrist, oh my goodness,
you certainly don't talk about it. It's, right, yeah, right. Exactly. It's very
so
different.
So it has a historical connotation.
Yeah, and actually there are several graduate students I can think of now. One who graduated about a year ago did an anthropological thing on Korean suicide and how that's, you know, not talked about. And someone now is writing a post-war history of psychiatry and is defending soon. So it's a hot topic.
I mean, Japan kind of suffers from high suicide rate as well. And if it kind of they look at it negative, well, I guess they don't look at psychiatry negative, right?
I mean, here it's the specifics of psychiatry was specifically linked to the policing mechanisms of the colonial regime.
I was looking up because antibiotics, obviously, probably one of the biggest discoveries in modern medicine. And when that came out, it's actually the first time that it came out was like 1910. So it's a little bit after Severance Hospital came in. I was kind of going like, if they had antibiotics, right? And I mean, this has saved so many people.
Yeah, yeah. And particularly going into World War II, sulfa drugs, exactly, is what allows lots of people to recover quickly from wounds.
Right. And so if they actually had, you know, Severance Hospital, they came in and they had, antibiotics, something that, Koreans have never seen before. They were going through herbal medicine and things like that.
Sure.
This must be magic to them. But again, you talked about how there was a limitation of how Koreans were able to learn medicine.
I don't know the percentage of the classes, but as I said, usually the stereotype for Keijo is roughly 2/3 of the classes will be a Japanese cohort. My guess is Severance, it's probably much higher Korean. And that's, I'll be honest with you, that's the image that the two hospitals carry going into the 40s and into Haebang. Severance has a much better image specifically because it is educating Koreans. And so is Yeonhee, whereas Keijo is more of the kind of imperial university that's for the Japanese.
But how did people learn to use the new medicine?
Oh, yeah, sure. I think in two ways. One, of course, there are those who are braver and who are willing to kind of, you know, try it and risk it. But honestly, and this is not in no way, obviously, a positive image of the colonial regime, but just the fact that the colonial regime, at least in urban areas like Seoul, is fairly effective in terms of enforcing typhus, cholera, tuberculosis, and actually forcing people to quarantine, do other things. And then more importantly, and this is what, if I can jump forward in time a little bit,
sure.
When you get into the occupation in the 40s and then obviously the Korean War, lots of Koreans have to when you hit wartime circumstances and deprivation. Yeah. So famously, the Korean War is often regarded by many historians as the time when people stop saying like, look, I don't know what it is, it's new.
And, who cares?
And you're in,
who cares?
Yeah, exactly. You're in a UN refugee camp and someone says here, and you're like, sure, sure.
Yeah.
And that also, if you see, there are lots of UN posters basically saying, and the other side does this too, you come over on our lines, we will treat you and we will feed you. It's humanitarian. The message sells very strongly.
You know, it's kind of funny because I always like to say that Koreans like to go to the hospital over the smallest things, and they get...
I think the Korean War is what did it.
prescription drugs handed out very readily here in South Korea, very affordable also if you have, health insurance. And, I mean, it started off with a lot of skepticism. And you would, right? I mean, it's going...
Yeah, skepticism is a beautiful word, right? Because you didn't... It was new. People did not know what it was.
Yeah. We talked about how this is kind of the start of the Western medicine, obviously, Gojong, and then, you know, during the tail end of the Joseon Dynasty, kind of seeing what Western medicine is all about. And you also talked about kind of the limitations we saw during the colonial period. Would you say that Western medicine and Hanyak, which is, again, like Korean medicine, kind of continue to still flourish together during the colonial period?
I think they continue to flourish together, but they're also competing for some of the same patients and same market, so that after Haebang, you can anticipate that it's both competitive. I mean, it's both collegial, but it's also competitive. And I think that's also probably the case even today.
Yeah.
In that they complement each other. I know plenty of Koreans who will utilize both depending on what part of their body they're treating, particularly soft tissue. I know lots of Koreans who will go to Hanmihak for a wrap or for some needles implanted, but it is a market and it is a medical marketplace, as we're seeing today with the doctor strike. So I think it's also extremely competitive, and that comes out more after Haebang.
You know, what's funny is back in high school, I went to school in Brooklyn, and during practice, I sprained my ankle, and my dad took me to a Honeywon, right?
Which for soft tissue is exactly the way to go.
Oh, absolutely. And so I got, acupuncture and things like that, got dead blood pumped out and stuff like that. And then my teacher goes, my phys ed teacher goes, where's your, letter, doctor's note?
Sure.
And I said, doctor's note? Yeah. I said, do you accept
that? Because you were dealing with an American legal and medical regime.
Right. So, like, I, you know, so I asked her, I was like, you know, do you accept a note from an acupuncture hospital, you know, Eastern medicine? And she said, is he considered a doctor? I was like, well, I consider him as a doctor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so there was this whole discussion. And then, you know, my coach got involved and, you know, everything was resolved. But it was hard to explain, right?
No, like, but do we have time where I can quickly compliment that story? I tore ligaments in my right ankle in high school. And going the other way, of course, having parents were both doctors. I had the full casting, the 6 weeks of mobilization. And I went the total Western medical route because I knew of no alternatives that I know of now.
Although,
and I healed eventually, yeah.
Although if you tore your ligament, I think I would
go. Oh, I had serious. I still feel it today. I had torn ligaments in my right ankle.
I don't think I would go to
it wasn't a mild sprain. No.
Let's talk about how Severance became known as prominent in Korea. When was let's go back to Yonsei University. You said that the 50s was when it was formed, right?
And this is really quickly the period of post-Korean War, immense medical mobilization. Seoul National connects to the University of Minnesota in U.S. to professionalize itself. If you know downtown, there is now something called the Kunipuriwan, the National Medical Center. That was a project of Scandinavian countries post-Korean War helping. And exactly, Yonsei, Yonhee, and Severance get together, and in 57, they form Yonsei University. But this is a lot of money from the China Medical Board, which used to go to China, but now, post-49, China is no longer reachable, so the money comes to other parts of Asia. And I guess the idea was to combine a world-class hospital with a world-class university, and that's the combination we now know them in more commonly as Yonsei.
Which also means that you would have a medical school, right?
Yes.
But given the fact that, again, there is not a lot of Koreans who had the medical capacity or the medical knowledge just yet, because
at that moment, no. The classes, I'm sure, were much smaller than they are now.
Would it still be run by Korean professors?
That's a good question. Right? I think so, yes. But to give you an example, I can't speak for Yonsei, but I can speak for Seoldae. At that period where there are not a lot of people with like advanced graduate training, Seoldae literally in the 50s, post-Korean War, would take the guy who just finished the bachelor's and be like, you're the prof now, teach the next batch. but that's my honest guess is they probably took the existing doctors who were, from the colonial period, a lot of them with Japanese training or, you know, some combination of training, and were probably literally, and then also like Seoldae with Minnesota, I imagine lots of other foreign doctors in town, also this is post-Korean War, they probably talked to the U.S. military, they probably had visiting lectures, they did everything they could to and this is also the first generation of Koreans who themselves are going abroad for clinical visits, 6 month rotation. Even if you don't have the greatest English, you observe, you learn, you come back. Yeah, it's massive, massive post-Korean War medical rebuilding.
I have to say, I mean, whoever were the first sort of Korean doctors, they must have somehow learned from Western doctors.
Yeah, again, this is the Clark book, if you can find it. The pictures are absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and something so, you know, extensive and so difficult as medicine, and them being able to still learn it and come this far. And Korea has one of the best medical system, although right
absolutely, with health insurance post-87 and reforms. I know we're having problems right now, but nonetheless.
That's a completely different...
Yes, that's a later story, but it fits my comments about the market.
Absolutely. Professor DeMoya, as always, very fun topic, very educational as well. Thank you very much. Best of luck to you in Game 3, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You can listen to Korea Now with me, SJ Lee, by downloading the Arirang Radio application or tune in online by visiting www.arirangradio.com. So make sure you tune in Mondays through Fridays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Korea time.